Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. I'm so excited to have back on the podcast the Vagina Whisperer herself. We've had her on in the past, and now we're talking about her new book called Floored. And my goodness, you guys, we go into so much incredible information that you're going to want to share this episode with other women in your life. I promise you. Now, since 2007, Dr. Sarah Reardon has been caring for people's pelvic floors as a board certified pelvic floor physical therapist. She's the founder of an incredible community called the V-Hibe, which is an online pelvic floor workout platform for pregnancy, postpartum, menopause, painful sex, and pelvic floor strengthening. As the Vagina Whisperer on Instagram and TikTok, she has hundreds of thousands of followers. Sarah lives in New Orleans, Louisiana with her husband and two sons, and she is the author of this new book called Floored, a women's guide to pelvic floor health at every age and stage that is now released. And of course, we're going to have that linked up in the show notes. And I'd highly recommend. I am personally loving this book myself. And this is such an incredible conversation. I can't wait for you to hear. And please, please share this out with other women in your life. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We've already had you on the podcast before, but I'm so honored to have you back, especially with your new book, Floored, that everyone needs to get. It's incredible.
Well, thanks so much. It's great to see y'all. And yeah, I'm super excited about the release of Floored, my new pelvic floor book coming out. So I can't wait to chat more about it and just really share why this is such an important topic for people and kind of what they can gain from the book. So it's an exciting time.
And that's where we want to start. Like, why write Floored? And who is this book for? Who should be interested in getting this in their hands?
You know, it's interesting because I think, you know, I consider y'all and myself kind of like a little bit of social media OGs. Like, we've been on these platforms for a while and we're riding all of the waves. And I think part of it is not everyone wants to be on social media to learn about their bodies. And so how can we really disseminate super important health information in ways that are different and accessible? So whether it's, you know, social media content, whether it's blogs, whether it's, you know, in-person appointments, or also just sitting down and reading and kind of meeting people where they are and giving this information in a way that is really accessible and easy to digest at a pace that they can move through on their own. I also think that this is still very much, pelvic health is still very much kind of an under-discussed and under-treated part of healthcare. You know, I've been on social media for years and, you know, even with the kind of growth of the awareness of pelvic floor therapy, every single day I still get people that are saying like, oh, I didn't know that pelvic floor therapy could help with leakage or pregnancy or painful sex. And so it lets me know that there's still so much more advocacy that needs to be done. And I think Floored was just another avenue to be able to do that.
I agreed. And I have to say, I am reading your book and I do think it is perfectly written for someone who, I mean, for everyone, for all women, everyone with a vagina, but to feel like you're not alone. Like, the way that you write it is very easy to take in and not feel shameful, not feel judged, feel like you have this new understanding of your body. I think it's beautifully written and is going to be so impactful for so many people. So I think you're doing an incredible job.
Thank you.
Just need to say that.
No, I appreciate that. And it's fun. My husband was going through the chapters the other day and he's like, oh, you have a chapter called The Scoop on Poop? Really? And I was like, yeah, why not? I mean, I think it's a lot of these things that I talk about in my day to day or talk about with my patients. Like, a lot of people don't. And it's still, there's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of embarrassment or shame discussing this part of our body, or we don't even know who to go to, or you know, if we want to talk about these problems. So I appreciate you saying that, because some of it is just the way that we deliver information. I tend to be less technical and it's not always the proper anatomical term or whatever the case, but it's like we have to meet people where they are. And I think when we start going above their heads, we lose them. And so I really wanted it to be approachable and help people feel less alone. Like, if there's a book out about this, then you're definitely not the only one experiencing pelvic floor problems. and also have a little bit of humor to it too. Like I do think it's kind of fun to, make this not so serious and so intense and so heavy that we can kind of bring light to these issues and make them feel really approachable.
Now, as we're talking about pelvic health in all different stages of life, which I love Dr. Sarah, isn't she the best? We also get to acknowledge that support goes outside of just movement health and understanding our pelvic floor, but really fueling our bodies as well, which is why I have been committed and still sticking to, as I'm breastfeeding, my needed supplements. This is what I used when I was trying to conceive, when I was pregnant, and into postpartum. And truly, they have supplements for well into beyond any of these stages. If you have not checked out Needed, I'd highly recommend doing so. Now, we do have a 20% discount on your first order. That is code OPTIMAL. And you just head to thisisneeded.com. Use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get that 20% off your first order. That's THISNEEDED.com and use code OPTIMAL to get 20% off your order, because Needed really offers radically better nutrition for women. And I'm talking all the way from conception and then beyond motherhood, like going into later in life stages, wherever you are, and not just for women, but they have men supplements as well. They really support the body and are doing so much to really look at what is optimal at whatever stage that we're at, not just baseline, not just, going to keep us at that baseline level, but really what's going above and beyond based on what the research is really saying can really support our body. And I trust Needed. I have felt so much better taking it. And I just know that I'm really supporting my body from the inside out through all these different phases. So if you have not checked out Needed, I'd highly recommend. Again, that's thisisneeded.com and use code OPTIMAL at checkout. And I think that's one of the beautiful things of you being on social media and having written this, because you learn being on social media, you have to meet people where they're at. Like I've gotten pushback from other PTs of like, why would you present it like this? But then your information is correct. But I'm like, because I have to meet someone where they're at,
right?
And I'm not talking to the PT, I'm talking to the average person. So I think you understanding that going into writing a book is like makes it even that much better. And it's so funny because, as you said, there is so much more awareness. And yet I got pregnant, my first pregnancy with Dante. I had a friend and she was like, well, welcome to the leaking club. And it's like, why are we still having this message?
And that's a friend who's in social media, in the health and wellness space. So it's like you bring up that, I think these topics are becoming more and more prevalent. But maybe that's just the scope we're looking through, because that's our algorithm. Mm-hmm. Our algorithm is throwing that in our face every single day. Like, everyone's talking about pelvic wellness, pelvic floor wellness, women's health, but that's just what we consume. So the average person out there isn't going to be getting fed that like we are. So what do you think are some of the gaps that you're still seeing in pelvic health, women's health? And I mean, do you even still have patients come to you that have had a baby or are in postpartum but weren't prescribed pelvic floor therapy?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So to answer the second part of that question, I mean, I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, which is my hometown, but I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say like the Deep South is still very much behind in the healthcare sector. I mean, I think that I moved here 8 years ago and there were no single pelvic floor therapy clinics like that were private. They were all kind of in hospitals and still felt like the redheaded stepchild of therapy. And now there's several, which is beautiful. We've got so many more pelvic health therapists, but it's still a struggle to connect with the medical community and say, like, this should be a first line treatment option for someone with incontinence or pain or postpartum or perimenopausal versus like, let's do every medication and treatment and injection and surgery. And then like, you haven't tried therapy yet. Now go try it, when they've already been kind of suffering or dealing with dysfunction for months or years. So I think we're still working really hard to make this a first line therapy, like we maybe do with other types of injuries or pains in our body, like low back pain or an ACL injury. But I think a lot of this is, one of the myths about pelvic floor issues is that they only affect women during pregnancy or after birth and then with aging. And that is not the case. And like one of the first chapters in this book is about periods, because that's really when our hormones are changing and when we have an opportunity to first connect with our pelvic floor and learn about our bodies and really not have so much shame around them. And I think that when we're able to trickle in pelvic health information at different stages, whether it's periods or becoming sexually active or, you know, if you're a female athlete or then kind of the pregnancy, postpartum, later in life stuff, which we become more aware of it because we typically, you know, may develop issues. I think that we just become better advocates for our bodies. And I think it becomes normal to have pelvic health education and be aware if there's a pelvic health issue. So I think that's one of the gaps is we need to start this education earlier. I think the other thing is that there are three times in a woman's life that are risk factors for developing pelvic floor issues, and it's pregnancy, giving birth, and menopause. And 100% of women will go through menopause, and over 40 million women a year in the US give birth. And I'm like, those women are not getting proactive care. Like, if we know these are risk factors for pelvic floor issues, why aren't they seeing pelvic floor PT during pregnancy or postpartum or when they're in perimenopause or menopausal? So I think there's just so much more we can do to keep pushing this, the system forward to, you know, have women advocate for their care, but also have medical providers say like, oh yeah, this is a common stage where these issues can present. Let's get you to pelvic floor therapy right away instead of come back in 6 months or a year or after surgery.
Exactly. And I think sometimes it's, if you haven't ever experienced pelvic floor issues, you might not know what to look for or what might be signs that you're starting to have anything. And so being proactive with it during those three stages can also be so beneficial because you might catch something prior to it, you know, becoming more of an issue. And that's what's so hard. I try to advocate like go in second trimester at least, go in third trimester, learn how to push. You know, it's for me, I didn't necessarily have a lot of symptoms during pregnancy, but just having that feedback from a pelvic floor therapist was so beneficial to help guide the rest of my journey through pregnancy and into postpartum. And so it's, again, I just want to help reiterate this message, you know, of how important it is. And I want to talk a little bit because you touched on how, you know, especially with these stages and hormonal changes that happen, especially the moment we get our period, how does that impact our pelvic health or symptoms that we might already have? I know women who say, well, when I have my period, sometimes I feel like my pelvic floor symptoms have gotten worse. Why might that be the case?
Absolutely. And so, you know, a lot of these things can start at a really young age. So, you know, when you start menstruating, the average age is around 11 now for young women. One, this is the first time that we're kind of having to connect with this part of our body. And so it's learning how to use menstrual hygiene products, like inserting a tampon or a menstrual cup or disc, giving young women options to stay active or feel confident when their pelvic floor, when their menstrual cycles are happening. The other thing is we have these kind of monthly cycles of hormones in our body. And so, you know, right when you're ovulating mid-cycle, you have more estrogen, which means you have more discharge, more vaginal lubrication. And then right after that, progesterone increases, which causes constipation and bloating and fatigue. And so I think understanding that cycle can actually help you be like, oh, this is why my discharge is changing. Then, you know, when you're constipated during, when you have progesterone higher, it's like, oh, this is how to poop properly. So I'm not straining, which can weaken my pelvic floor over time. Or, you know, when you have lower estrogen levels right before your cycle and when you're bleeding and after, it's like, oh, you actually have less pelvic floor tone. So you may feel like, oh, I have more leakage during those times. Or so I think it's just explaining these things to women like monthly. We're going to have over 400 cycles throughout our lifetime. 400 times we're going to go through something, but nobody's explaining to us like what's really happening with our body. And that's hard. And that period shouldn't be painful, like a little bit of discomfort or abdominal cramping. But if you're missing school, work, if pain's so debilitating, it's affecting your function and quality of life, that's an early indicator of endometriosis for a teen girl. So I think just knowing this as parents and knowing this as young women can literally change the trajectory of how we're managing pelvic floor issues later on. And, you know, when you become sexually active, that sex shouldn't be painful. You know, even like I get questions from grown women about like, where do I put the lube? You know, and I'm like, you know, this is a light bulb moment for me that I'm like, oh, these are great lubes to use. I'm like, we need to educate women about, like, this is the vulva. This is the vaginal opening. This is where you can apply it. You can put it on your partner. You can't use silicone lube with silicone toys or oil-based lube with latex condoms. I mean, just the real basics of sexual, menstrual, pelvic health care, like just starting from the basics, I think. And I love being in this field because I feel like I've learned so much about my body as a woman. And I'm like, everyone deserves this information, you know, everybody with a vagina needs this information. So again, that's really what I hope Floor can give you no matter what life stage you're at.
That's probably my favorite thing about doing the podcast. Sorry if people think that I'm doing this to get information out to people. That's like a good, but like to how much I learn myself, like myself from people like you or other experts that come in and educate, the amount that I'm learning is so insane. Everything we've learned from all of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you touched on it again, early education. Like as soon as young women are starting their menstrual cycles, like we need to start educating on these things so that these things that are common don't have to continue to be seen as the norm. And we can start to give people options and opportunities to get out of that pain that they're feeling during their early menstrual cycles. And you already touched on products and when to use certain products and when not to use certain products. And I know that you like to educate that, like especially different stages of life or when you're having hormonal changes or when you're having that extra discharge or dryness. Like when... Are there other products that you like to touch on that might be super valuable for someone depending on a certain stage of life or a certain phase of the cycle that they're in and might not be as helpful during other phases?
Absolutely. It's such a great question. And one, I applaud you for being here. I love conversations with all genders, but particularly the male gender about pelvic floor health. And because it's, you know, I have two sons, y'all have two sons. It's really like they're going to be more comfortable with a woman's body, understanding it, knowing what a pelvic floor is. And it's not just for women that I think that need to kind of understand this, but I think all genders, you know, so I love that, Dom. And
I also had a lot of pelvic floor issues myself, and it's things, and I know that your book is geared towards the woman, but I have a passion for this topic as well because I was having a lot of issues in my early 20s that I was very shamed about, or shaming myself about because I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And so yeah,
and it's wild because we're all PTs, and when you don't learn about the pelvic floor and something starts happening, you don't think, oh, are there muscles that are affecting like how I'm peeing or pain with pooping or sexual function or pain. And so it's really kind of just connecting those dots for people. Yeah. And again, even in our field, I think medical providers and PTs as well, we just don't know about the pelvic floor often until something is affecting it. So with respect to products, I mean, I kind of go through this in each chapter. The way the book is split up is I go through kind of symptoms or kind of body systems. It's like there's a bladder chapter on like how to pee properly. So every chapter I give you like what's the normal, because I think we aren't really taught that, like how should I pee so I don't jack up my pelvic floor? Like you should sit down, don't push when you pee, don't do Kegels when you pee, like just let it flow and take deep breaths and, you know, only pee when you have the urge to go. So giving kind of the normals. And then I go over kind of, if you are experiencing symptoms, these are some things that you should try. And, you know, and I go through that for bowel health and sexual pain, and then also life stages like pregnancy and postpartum and menopause and menstruation. But I think, you know, a lot of what I hope that people can gain from this, and this is what I think you all do so well with Gen Health as well, is that like, ultimately people need to kind of be the ambassadors for their body, right? Like, we can tell you this is a great product, but like you have to use it. You have to do the stretching and the breath work and the releasing. And so it's giving you tools to help yourself. For internal work, there are things like vaginal dilators or therapy wands that can work to desensitize the tissue, help relax the vaginal opening for intercourse, release areas of tension or spasm in the pelvic floor. Everything from different devices for weakness, like prolapse. You can use pessaries or internal bladder supports. You can use external devices that kind of give you some like pelvic girdle and perineal support. Pooping, like the squatty potty. Y'all know I'm like, I should be an ambassador for that product because I'm like, everybody needs a squatty potty under their feet to poop. But like little things like this that we do day in and day out, peeing, pooping, exercising, that if you just make some of these small changes, they go a really long way. And again, we're just not educated on what the normals are and what we can do to prevent pelvic floor issues, like how to breathe, how to pee, how to poop, how to lift, how to, you know, prep for intercourse. And so different things like that, that just giving you a sense of, hey, what is the normal? Here are some things you can do at home to start right now. And if you are having issues, seeing an in-person therapist is always an option, doing at-home programs or utilizing a lot of the tools and tips I give in the book. Like, great thing about medical care now is you have options. We can meet people where they are in a lot of different ways.
Now, as we're talking about products as well, I know that there are some in the pelvic health world, because as you said, pelvic health is becoming such a widespread topic, but there are also some products that might be marketed that are a little predatory during phases of this, of a woman's life, that she really feels shameful about smells or about different things that are going on, or like needing a million Kegels. Or so how do we know what products might be beneficial, which I know you're going to go through in the book in every stage to help outline that more. But for someone just, you know, getting ads or feeling different things about their body, are there some that you can say, you know what, skip this. Don't pay attention to these types of products.
So it's a, such a great question. And I do, I mean, there's a whole section in the book called The Business of Our Business, because like anything that starts getting really popular, it's like there's a boom. And, you know, there's billions of dollars spent a year on vulvar healthcare, but also vulvar wellness. And wellness is different than healthcare. Like what I'm promoting is, it's not like a better smelling vagina or a prettier one. It's actual like function of your pelvic floor. So I actually want to think about the function of the pelvic floor versus just like how it looks, smells, tastes, or whatever. The other thing is, anything that's promising you like a super quick fix is just likely going to be, like you said, predatory, but like short-term effective perhaps, or not effective at all. Because there is no magic wand that you can wave to fix an issue with one 30-minute session of a vibrating chair, or a laser wand that you can insert to like rejuvenate your tissues. The studies on some of these devices, one, they only focus on the short term. So there are some benefits to, say, red light therapy of using an internal infrared wand, but the studies stop at 6 months of use. And so we don't know the long-term effectiveness of that. Do I think it can be helpful? Absolutely. But I also think that you also have to do the work. I mean, you have to strengthen your muscles. You have to connect with your body. You have to change your habits to give yourself long-term effectiveness. Some of these products do give a little bit of a boost. So some of the things I do like are like internal devices that you can use at home, like for a biofeedback or a Kegel trainer. But most products are focused on strengthening. So one, you have to know that you're the right person for strengthening, because a lot of people have tension and strengthening would be the wrong thing. The second thing is, some of these things can be really helpful for a boost, but you still have to be compliant with them. They're not like a one-size-fits-all, one-time-use thing. They can be costly. So know that you may spend a couple $1,000s on a procedure or a device or a session that really is, has minimal to no effectiveness or very short-term effectiveness. And two, I think that you know that even after you get the boost from these products, you have to keep doing the work, the muscle training to have long-term success and relief. So I always say it's like brushing and flossing your teeth. Like you can get a cavity fix if you've got some issues or decay, but you can't just stop brushing and flossing after that. Like you have to do the daily maintenance and routine. But if you learn the small digestible tips and changes and how to integrate pelvic floor exercise into things you're already doing, it's less overwhelming. It's not this whole life overhaul. It's actually quite simple. So, yeah, I mean, I just really, I do love the awareness of pelvic floor, and I'm like, more vaginas in the spotlight, the better. But I do think we need to be cautious and thoughtful about what is backed by research, what is kind of, you know, just a quick fad or a quick fix that just really doesn't have long-term benefits to it.
Like you said, when something becomes popular, especially in media, the marketing vultures come out and they start preying on the opportunity and preying on people's insecurities. And I think that that becomes part of the problem when you find someone who's 10 years, 20 years down the road and has been having symptoms this whole time.
Yeah.
The frustration and depressive thoughts that come in because they've been promised so many times, I can fix this and I can fix it quickly, and then it doesn't happen. taking the approach that you're saying, where you come in with the education, where you understand it's not going to be an immediate fix, but it's going to be a lifestyle change, and you'll start to notice benefit down the road. When someone goes in with that mindset, you're setting yourself up for so much less disappointment, because you already have the symptoms. And so making those small changes, there's not going to be any change like immediately, and
right.
you're just living with the symptoms that you already had, but you didn't come in with the expectation that tomorrow this is going to be gone.
Right.
Maybe 6 months, maybe a year down the road, we'll start to notice difference, you know, and it might not take that long, or might take longer in some cases, but I think that's an amazing approach to take. I want to take a turn and talk about prolapse. You mentioned it briefly when you were talking about devices, and I know a lot of people might be, you know, encouraged to do surgery when it comes to prolapse, depending on how advanced or depending on the type of surgeon or provider they're with. Why not just get surgery to fix something like that? And why do such a high percentage of people maybe need to have repeat surgery or revisions after getting surgery?
It's a great question. And so pelvic organ prolapse is when this kind of hammock of muscles, the pelvic floor, isn't as supportive as we need it to be. And the pelvic organs in the female body, typically the bladder, the uterus, the colon, kind of start to push through into the vaginal walls. And it feels like a bulge in the vagina, pressure, heaviness in the vagina, or something's falling out. And what happens is that there's a couple things. Is the treatment is like surgery, like fix the prolapse, lift the lift the bladder, put mesh or tack up the vaginal walls. I think in physical therapy, but particularly pelvic floor therapy, like I'm always looking for root cause. So I'm like, is it they're chronically straining when they're constipated? Is it that they have improper lifting mechanics and technique, and they're holding their breath and doing a Valsalva and pushing their tissues past what they can, you know, support? That they have an avulsion tear during a vaginal birth and they are not able to support their pelvic organs? And, you know, I think that we always need to look up, like, what's the cause and whether you have surgery or not. I've had several patients recently go in, but I'm like, you need to do pelvic floor training before, have your surgery, and do pelvic floor training after, just like you would if you had a knee replacement or, you know, back surgery. Like, we are in hospitals, in the hospital day one, getting therapy if we have an orthopedic surgery. But that same thing's not happening for pelvic floor surgeries. So one, you need to do pre-op and post-op surgery. Two, if you don't fix the root cause of what contributed to this, it could be birth, which if you don't plan to have future births, that's one thing. But two is that you have a 30% chance of that surgery having to be repeated. So if you have a prolapse surgery at 40, at 50, by 10 years, there's a third of a chance. One in three people will have that repeated, because we never taught them how to decrease straining, how to manage their pressure, how to contract and strengthen their pelvic floor properly. And so we're not equipping women with the tools they need for long-term repair and success. And it's, I think, just another example of how, you know, women's healthcare is not prioritized and being kind of really given the full spectrum of care that we're giving people in other ways. You know, I mean, when I always have seen male clients, but I saw a lot of male clients when they were having prostate surgeries and they would get their prostate removed. And that has a high risk of urinary incontinence and erectile dysfunction. But I saw them prior to their surgeries. I saw them immediately after their catheter was removed, which is around day 10. And then I saw them ongoing for 2 to 3 months because they had a risk of urinary incontinence. And I'm like, wait, but every woman giving birth or every woman having a prolapse repair has these same issues, but we're not proactively referring them. So any type of pelvic surgery you have, whether it's a hysterectomy, an endometriosis surgery, a tummy tuck, a diastasis repair, a prolapse repair, pelvic floor therapy really should be come before and come after to give you long-term success of that. But I think we just, again, it's something that we are at a point where we have to advocate for it as women and as patients.
I cannot wait for the day when medical providers are providing the same kind of referrals as they are for other, other surgeries, other treatments, other genders.
Right.
You know, that day will come, because this like, conversation is just...
We will make sure it does, Jen.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's even a little bit of what, when I think back, because I had a bilateral inguinal hernia when I was in high school. I was 17 years old, and I had the surgery, had a mesh put in. Great, it's fixed. but nothing else. And just right. like thinking back, had I even started doing some therapy prior to getting the surgery, I may have never even needed the surgery, let alone, you know, I continued to have symptoms through my 20s, you know?
Right. And a hernia is a prolapsed, right? It's a prolapse yeah. through the abdominal wall, the inguinal yeah. canal. So it's the same thing. It's like prolapse is like when we've got this increased pressure in our kind of abdominal pelvic cavity and it's trying to find its way out, right? So it's yeah. going to find the path of least resistance. And unfortunately for people with vaginas, it's the vagina. It's like that's the path of least resistance. There's an opening there. There's gravity. There's pressure down. And so that's typically where it will present and lead to prolapse or hemorrhoids or things like that. So, and prolapse is scary. And I think it's really embarrassing for women. But I think that there is so much we can do to help prevent it. There's so much we can do to help improve it and help people feel more confident in their bodies and to make those surgeries more successful. I'm not against surgery. I just think we need to give people the right tools and resources to make those surgeries as successful as possible.
100%. And just, we talk about that all the time, but whether we're talking about back pain, whether we're talking about right. bunion surgery, like it's all the same thing, you know, and getting to the root cause, like you've been saying. And I have noticed like there's a little uptick in social media, I think in the last like few years, where women who are super, super strong, lifting really, really heavy, will show like, oh, I leaked, and that's normal. So yeah. at what point are we saying this is fine? This is normal, and this needs to be something that we're actively working on, and it's not as normal.
So no amount of leakage is normal. It's whether it's a leak with a cough or a sneeze or a leak with heavy lifting. Ultimately, leakage is information from your body that your pelvic floor can't support the load you're asking it to do. So whether it's with a cough or a jump or lifting super heavy weights, your tissues, your pelvic floor muscles and tissues can't support against that pressure. Now, if you make a very kind of conscious choice to say, I'm going to lift these heavy weights and I'm just going to let my bladder content spill on the floor, like that's a choice. But I at least want you to know, like, okay, this is what this means. Like, yes, you are a badass woman and a powerhouse. And like, I am like, yes, go strong woman. But I'm also like, but your pelvic floor is being affected from that. So if you yeah. are okay with that at the sake of, you know, PRing or lifting, then that's totally fine. That's your choice. I think we all have a choice in how we want to address our bodies. But do know that these are long-term things that could like lead to surgery or severe incontinence and things like that. So I just think that it's interesting because when I see those things happen, it's like glorified a little bit. And I think what should be glorified is like how strong she is. But I don't think we should glorify that she's peeing her pants on the gym floor, because I guarantee you, no offense, Dom, if there was a man peeing his pants on the, you know, that would probably be a little bit more embarrassing. Or if he was like
yeah.
pooping all over the floor, we're not like, way to go, Dom, you know, you're thinking like, oh, that's probably a little bit of a problem, you know? So I think it's just information for women to know, like in the short term, this can feel manageable. But in the long term, if it goes unaddressed or unmanaged, it can lead to much higher levels of dysfunction and incontinence and pain that can really affect your quality of life. I mean, 50% of women over the age of 65 leak urine. It's one of the number one reasons for admission to a nursing home later in life. You know, I think that it's people quit working, they spend a ton of money on incontinence products, they stop traveling, they stop socializing, they stop being intimate. Because of something like incontinence, it contributes to depression. So I think we just have to kind of know like, okay, this is a choice. And is this choice the one you want to make, knowing kind of these are the potential side effects?
Right. That's a good breakdown. And I think on that note too, I would love to understand, there's a lot of postural habits that we do in every day that can affect our pelvic floor. And as women, we tend to cross our legs or, you know, like at what point are some postural habits that we're doing potentially affecting our pelvic floor, and which ones might be like, that's okay, you know?
Right. So I think if you already have pelvic floor issues, whether it's tension or weakness, I think it's worth kind of automatically assessing like, okay, how am I sitting? Are you sitting with your legs twisted up like a pretzel? Are you rotating your thighs in kind of multiple hours throughout the day? Are you a butt clencher and you're like sitting at your desk on your Zoom call, squeezing your butthole? All of those things affect your pelvic floor. I think that the other thing is that I do teach people kind of in the book, like, what are some things that you could do proactively? Everything from how you're sleeping, like make sure your joints are stacked, that you're not hiking one hip up or rotating it in. You've got pillows for support. I think movement is key. People are always like, what's the best posture, you know, for, you know, working in my pelvic floor. I'm like, the next one you take, like sit, stand, move, like take breaks throughout the day. I think anything we're in for too long of a time is going to affect us. I've got a young kiddo who loves to read, but when he reads, he like slouches, what we call sacral sitting, and I like nerdy PT talk. And he's got super short hip flexors and hamstrings right now. I'm like, oh. And so I'm just already like, at this age, kids are sitting and they're just like for so long. And I'm like, I can already see the changes on his posture. So I think when you're always thinking about like neutral posture is best, you want your ears stacked over your shoulders, stacked over your hips, and none of this kind of slouching forward, rounded shoulders, sacral sitting, and just monitoring how you're sitting, how you're sleeping, how you're standing, not popping your hip out to one side or kind of resting like always the baby on the left or always the baby on the right. Really trying to kind of just take note of how you're standing and moving. And I go over in the book kind of how to adjust those so it's as neutral as possible as often as possible.
That's a good note.
And posture is that thing that, I mean, it's so hard to educate on posture too, because I mean, Jen and I live in the camp and you might disagree that, you know, no one posture is best. And we're not trying to hold one stiff, rigid posture all day long, because that also can have detriment to the core and pelvic floor. And so it's so hard to tell people like, oh, you want neutral posture, but you want to be dynamic and you want to be supported and you want to, and it doesn't matter if you slouch a little bit, but you can, you know, like it's such a complex topic that it just takes that individual investigation a little bit to like understand what your tendencies are and not live in those tendencies, but find ways to be a little more dynamic with them.
I love that. I think you're so right. And again, it's funny because in the book, it's like, it's a one size fits most, you know, it's not a one size fits all. It just can't be. And I remember when I said, I kind of announced on social media, like, I'm writing a book. A therapist, a pelvic floor therapist, reached out to me and she was like, are you trying to put us all out of work? And I was like, oh, no, girlfriend. Like, this is about raising awareness about this type of therapy for women to know that there's, you know, access to this instead of kind of living in the dark about our bodies. And if anything, this is to encourage them to go to in-person therapy. This is to kind of help them have a language to talk about their bodies, to understand if they have an issue or not. And there is no one size fits all. It just is not the case. But I do think it's a first step in helping people like, no, do I have a pelvic floor issue? What even is the pelvic floor? What can I expect if I go to therapy? What are things I can do at home while I'm on a 3-month wait list to get in, you know? So it's really just about empowering people to kind of better understand their bodies and starting to give them like the normals of what you can do right now, but then individualized care, like nothing beats it. But I don't think that everyone has access to that either.
1,000%. This is only going to help so much. I think everything out there, like anytime I talk about, you know, how the pelvic floor is integrated to the core, there's always a mention of like, go see a pelvic floor therapist because that's going to be the greatest feedback that you can get into your body, where especially this area that is not looked at, we don't touch it, we don't look at it, we don't, like, it's so taboo even on ourselves sometimes. Having that in-person therapist to provide better feedback is something invaluable, but learning the tools of how you can start to manage things on your own, also invaluable. So it can be both and, you know, it's not one or the other.
And
it's so funny because I still, like, even our nanny not too long ago, I mentioned something about the pelvic, or I think it was when I got the book, your book, and she was like, oh, Kegels. You know, it's like, it's still, the people hear pelvic floor, Kegels comes along with that. Like, that's pelvic floor health, you know?
And we've been conditioned to think like pelvic floor Kegels for decades. And I think medical providers are still, that was the training they had. And so we're working now to kind of unwind that. And it's a much more nuanced care than like, oh, pelvic floor Kegels, like better sex Kegels, leakage Kegels. Like, it's just not, I'm always like, it's like saying back pain, do crunches. I'm like, that's just not how we treat folks. It's just ineffective, you know? And so I think we've been doing a disservice as a medical community to kind of continuing to perpetuate that narrative, because it still is the case. And I remember a patient came in a couple months ago and she was talking about the childbirth education video she was getting through her hospital, our local hospital. And there was a nurse on there and the presentation that was like, and you need really strong pelvic floor muscles to push your baby out. So do your Kegels all the way through pregnancy. And I was like, that is absolutely wrong. Like, first makes of all, no your sense. Pelvic floor does not push your baby out. Your uterus does. And you need coordinated pelvic floor muscles. You need muscles that can contract, but also relax and lengthen. And, you know, we're still perpetuating that. So I think you and I and a lot of other pelvic health therapists and PTs are just trying to kind of like come back to the middle a little bit of how, like, let's really kind of get away from that and really teach people about how these muscles work, like just like every other muscle in our body. They contract, they relax, they need to be coordinated, they need to be functional, but they don't just do one thing.
I think I was talking with Jen and I'm all down for a Kegel revival and hear me out on this. Okay. No, hear me out on this. See if I can convince you. We rebrand the Kegel as the exercise that teaches you what the full contracted and relaxed state of the pelvic floor muscles are. And as we teach a bicep curl, as we teach any other exercise, the Kegel needs to take on this burden of teaching the individual, okay, I am contracted, and now I am fully relaxed. And it doesn't have to be seen as this exercise that is just an end range contraction held into infinity. It has reps to it, and it has the full length to it. And if that's how everyone taught a Kegel, great. I think that could be a great place for everyone to start to then figure out, oh, wow, I am always kind of tense. Or, wow, I could use a little more tension. That's my Kegel revival.
You know, I love that rebrand, Dom. And it's funny because Kegels, I'm like, when did they become so polarizing? People are like, no, yeah. Kegels, all Kegels. Yeah. And I'm like, there's no all or nothing anything. Yeah. Like, I'm kind of like, just sit back and like watch these conversations happen because I'm like, there just is no one thing. And it's nothing is totally bad and nothing is the holy grail. I mean, it right. is, yep. that is not medicine. That's not therapy. That's not pelvic floor training. It's just not, you know? And so I think it's really kind of interesting to watch these dynamics happen. Like the peeing in the shower, it's like, don't do it. And it's like, it's totally fine. I'm like, y'all, it's just like, just everybody take a deep breath. And if you need to pee in the shower, pee in the shower. Like, like just relax, everybody. But yeah. it's one of those things that I think you're totally right. It's got such this kind of like connotation if it can only be one thing, but I'm totally down for a rebrand. I'm also down for a rename because this is named after a male gynecologist in the 1970s who did a study on like strengthening the pelvic floor postpartum. And his name was, last name was Kegel. So I think like, if we're going to do a rebrand, let's like also do a rename. I'm down
call
for that.
Call it the Reardon. Call it the Reardon.
I know. I mean, and that's the issue. Like there's so much nuance. And I love that also on your page, which people hopefully are following the Vagina Whisper, you know, there's so much allowance that you provide as well so that it doesn't have to be so black and white. And I think even in pregnancy, like it was so sad for me to see, you know, like, oh, if you want to have your baby in the perfect position, you can only sit up and you can only be forward. Don't ever like lean back in your chair. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
I know
that you're going to watch TV and just like be sitting at the edge of your couch, always tense and like in this perfect position to make sure your baby's in. Like some of these messages can be so fearful for women.
Yeah.
And so I love that you're also providing the real breakdown of the, like understanding it's not all or nothing. There's no one way and what is allowed based on what you need within your body.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think that there's two things that I've kind of been thinking about recently. And one of them is like, there is a fire hose of information coming towards women right now about what you should put on your vagina, how you should, you know, your how it should look, what you need to do for pregnancy, how to manage postpartum, do you wear a weighted vest? I mean, it is a fire hose. And I'm like, it's almost too much where I think it can be so consuming and put more pressure on us. And because we're constantly thinking we're doing the wrong thing. And then the other thing is that like, you know, I'm in a little bit of the camp of like, less is more. Like, I think sometimes if we just like, just we take note of small, simple things we can do throughout the day. And the pelvic health world, we just haven't even gotten the basics, which is really where I want to start. And what I hope Floor gives people is just an understanding of their bodies. But sometimes I think we also need to lean into our intuition a little bit. Like, okay, this is like, is this where I want to spend my energy? Is this, does this really make sense to me? Do I really believe this is like the holy grail answer for this one thing? You know, I think we kind of need to like soak in the information as much as you want or not. The good news is we do have options. I think we're always trying to let women know there are options. There's no one protocol or pathway that you have to take. And then you just lean back a little bit and kind of listen to like, what do I want? What do I care about? Is this what matters? You know, and I think that we're also going to make mistakes. Like a year ago, I started playing tennis and no, a couple of years ago, I started playing tennis at like the age of 40. I was like, I need to pick up a new sport. Like I need, you know, but it was so lovely and it's, you know, beautiful. You're outside in the weather and you're meeting new friends and you're exercising and your mind's focused on one thing. And about a year ago, I was playing tennis and I felt myself leak when I was like moving for a ball. And I was like, holy shit, like the vagina whisperer can't like pee her pants, you know? So I'm like, Sarah, what are you going to do, you know? And so I started doing strength training and I started doing strength training like full body, but knowing what I know, I was like, I'm integrating pelvic floor contractions and breathing into like every repetition and really connecting with my core and pelvic floor and relaxing afterwards and really very thoughtfully and mindfully. And to your point earlier, Dom, about like these things take time, like 1 year later, I'm like, I can feel so much stronger in my pelvic floor. And I was kind of just like resting on my laurels, like I'm fine, I don't have problems. But when we start asking different things of our body, whether it's tennis or birth or running or a new sexual position or whatever it is, it's like our bodies require different things. And so I think I feel so grateful that I knew this was an option for me. Pelvic floor training was an option so I could implement it like right away. And now I feel so much better. But I think ultimately we're just trying to give people options and it's up to them whether they want to lean into that or not.
Mm-hmm. I thank you so much for even sharing, you know, the vagina whisperer also has.
Oh my God. And I was like, head on. I was like, okay, this is the day I wear hot pink pants too, you know, like, where everybody can see it. I'm like, oh, it's there. But it goes to show you, like, it was so consuming for me. Like, I was like, oh my God, can people see this? Like, do I keep going? And I couldn't play my game well. And I was like, just wanted to get it over with so I could go home. And I'm like, this is what it's like if you have an issue in this area. It is very consuming for your mind. It affects how we function. It affects how we show up. And it was a good lesson for me of like, one, you need to do the work too. And two, it influences so many things about our bodies and our lives and our self-esteem that really people are struggling with, you know? And again, I just want to give them an option for care.
Right, exactly. And oh my gosh, this conversation is just so great. I'm so grateful.
I kind of want to get a quick scoop on poop because you brought it up. I know. You brought it up and we can't go through this whole interview without talking a little more about poop. But you brought up briefly like the peeing in the shower thing and just some of these myths or things that have become commonalities like don't go pee just in case or don't sit on the toilet with your phone and scroll, you know, the sit and scroll. And some of these things, like, what are things that people should actually be aware of when it comes to their bowel and urinary health and voiding in the bathroom?
Yeah. And I will add, just because I feel like so many women are like, oh, my husband just, he's going to be in there for a while and he's going to, you know, could that be making things worse for him?
Yes. Yeah. So, and it's funny because I actually like, for anybody who pre-orders the book, I have a membership platform with pelvic floor exercises where I gift everyone 30 days access to the membership. But I also have like my top 10 pelvic floor tips that I actually do. Cause I was like, okay, I want, like, if you wanted to like think about your pelvic floor, what are things that you could do? And for peeing, it's like, don't push when you pee. It's better just to sit down if it's not like a super gross toilet, but sit down, take some deep breaths, don't push. And this is for all genders. Like, don't push, just like sit, let it flow. And then the other one is go pee when you have the urge to go. Like, you don't want to go all the time, but you also don't want to over delay it because it can tighten your pelvic floor muscles. And like medical providers and teachers and, you know, people who don't like to use public restrooms do that a lot. Also, kids do it a lot. For pooping, using a stool under your feet when you're pooping. So that puts you in more of a squatting position, which relaxes your pelvic floor so that you empty better. And don't hold your breath when you're pushing to poop. Like, I always say, blow out like you're blowing out through a straw. And even in my house, I have these little twirly straws that you get at kids' birthday parties, and I keep them in there. So if my kids you know, kids are notorious for getting constipated because they eat junk or they hold off going poop because they're playing. And so I put those straws in there. So if my kids have to like push, I just give them a little straw and then they blow through it and it helps their pelvic floor open up to relax. And then again, not sitting on the toilet for too long, because that sitting on the toilet and straining puts more pressure on your pelvic floor, which can weaken it, than running, jumping, coughing, sneezing, doing crunches. So that's something that you do almost every single day. And if you're sitting there for many, many minutes, 30 minutes or more, you know, anything more than 5 minutes is too long. So I'm like, sit down, elevate your feet, lean forward, you know, relax a little bit, but more than 5 minutes is too long. And then get up and walk away if you haven't gone. I also love a bidet. It's great for cleaning the area, less wiping. And then exhaling with exertion. And I think this is a really important for anyone who exercises or lifts, or even just a mom who's picking up things and moving them throughout the day. Holding your breath increases the pressure down on your pelvic floor and your abdominal wall. And again, those are areas that are vulnerable, especially during pregnancy and postpartum and with aging. So exhaling when you exert effort, like lifting weights, lifting a stroller, pushing a piece of furniture, just don't hold your breath. So just kind of simple tips and tools like that, that can be, again, easily done, but we're just never taught.
So good. And so many great, quick, like tools that people can utilize now and maybe help to raise awareness of what they've been doing. And I just, one last little push, get floored, because I myself love it. I have been reading it, you know, and I've done a lot of courses on pelvic health. And so being able to read it from a different perspective too, it's just, it's so cool. It's such a great book. I know it's going to help so many people, and I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you both. I know that we have, it's been awesome to see you go through your pregnancy journey and postpartum, and again, and then just also starting to really incorporate the pelvic health stuff into kind of what you're sharing, because you have such a great community. And I think anything you share can really help so many people. So I'm just super honored to be on y'all's platform and podcast. And thanks for having me.
Always love chatting with Sarah, as she is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to pelvic health at any stage of life. If you're interested in any of her resources, check the show notes. We'll have all those linked up. And please pass this episode along to anybody who might be in that phase of life, or pass on the book, because there's going to be so much more information in her new book that just came out. We also have our Pelvic Floor Foundations course that can give people a great grasp on just reconnecting with that pelvic floor and starting to integrate it into all of their movement. You can use code OPTIMAL10 as our podcast listener to get a special discount on that course. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.